Welcome to Alternative Investments Chat,
where we demystify the world of alternative investments and financing for entrepreneurs and investors alike.
With these discussions, we hope you're more empowered to unlock opportunities in your business or portfolio. I'm Erin.
And I'm Erica. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of M2I Alternative Investments Chat. My name is Erin. I'm here with my co-host, Erica, as per usual.
Just us today.
Today, we're going to be talking about our second part in our commodity series, which is fine art, collectibles, and more. If you missed our last episode, it was covering oil and gas, so be sure to check that out. But today, I'm excited to dive into fine art and collectibles.
I love it. Those are my favorite.
Right? Everybody loves it.
Everybody loves it. I know. The reason is there's a rising interest in non-traditional commodities because of their unique characteristics in investment, particularly in the face of economic uncertainty and inflation, that thing that happens all the time. But here's a quick breakdown before we dive further into this asset class of why they've gained attention. Mm-hmm. They hedge against inflation. There's diversification benefits, there's increased accessibility, and then there's also potential for long-term appreciation. Mm. So, Erin, tell me about the odds.
The odds. Yeah, let's start there. When it comes to investing, some people really like the idea of having a tangible item that they can hold and look at. Exactly.
Forever.
And especially with art, too, if you think about it, you can enjoy it while you have it. There are several other factors about collectibles that also stand out. In fact, Erica, you already mentioned one, which is the potential for long-term appreciation. Fine art is unique and often irreplaceable. Yeah. It's usually one of one. If you think about any of the most famous paintings, if you've ever been to the Met, all of those are one of one. The scarcity of the work by renowned artists can drive significant value appreciation over time. Mm. In fact, if we look at historical returns in the long run, certain segments of the art market have outperformed traditional asset classes, which is pretty crazy, interesting, particularly during periods of market volatility. Ownership of fine art is often associated with social status and prestige. If you think about places like Art Basel, we have a lot of very, very wealthy people that are coming together in Miami and going to look at different art pieces and buy or really invest in different art pieces. They're not just kind of, typically people aren't just looking at the art on the walls and saying, I like that one, I want that one. Yeah. They're looking at who the artist is, what is the value of the painting, what is the potential for this investment to appreciate over time, which is pretty cool. But what happens if you don't have enough money to purchase fine art?
You steal it.
Oh,
is that the wrong answer? No, wrong answer. Okay, sorry.
Let's redact that. Let's take that out of here.
Can you,
The next missing painting
edit that out, please. We don't want anyone to hear
it's
that.
It's going to be Erica.
No, earlier I mentioned that there's an increased accessibility to that plays into this asset class. Mm-hmm. And it's the rise of art funds and fractional ownership platforms that have made investing in fine art accessible to a broader audience, the me's and you's that we talk about all the time. These platforms allow investors to gain exposure to very high valuable pieces without needing to purchase the entire work. Mm. Although, would it be amazing if you came over and I just had like a Monet in my living room?
That'd be sick.
It would be awesome, but I can't afford that.
Yeah.
So how do we get a piece of that? Mm-hmm. So there is a platform called Masterworks. Mm. In personal opinion, of course, it's one of the best art investment platforms on the market. At least the ones that I could find in my research. So what happens is investors can own a stake of a multi-million-dollar artwork without needing that significant capital to actually purchase the entire piece itself. Right. So Masterworks has a quote-unquote showroom of the art that is likely to appreciate based on historical facts from the artists like Warhol, Banksy, and like I said, my fave, Monet. Mm-hmm. So investors purchase shares of individual artwork. So you can invest as little as $500 to $1,000, making it, again, so much more accessible for the everyday person. Mm. And a lot of people can invest, and then what they do is they hold on to that, and then they sell it. So there is one little fun fact. So Monet's late haystack painting sold for $110.7 million.
Wow.
Can you imagine if you put $500 into that? and then you get the return on that.
Right.
And then one of his other paintings, Naked Water Lily Pond, sold for $8.5 million in 2008. These are not going for pennies. These are going for good chunks of money. Mm-hmm. And to be able to own a piece of that is really cool.
Yeah.
Now, remember that everything, there's risks in everything. Mm-hmm. So these are illiquid.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have them. You can't just sell them in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And they're a market risk. So values depend on the demand for the art.
Right.
The economic condition, ad trends in the art market. So there's no guarantee. Just because, you know, think about some of the most famous artwork. I might love it. You might not.
Right.
What does the market say?
Right. And also, too, there's that saying that, you know, art is more valuable when an artist dies. Because after an artist passes, they obviously can't produce any more art. So the finite works that have been created go up in value. So that's also something that contributes to value.
Yep. Yep. And with these platforms, there's fees, mm-hmm. too. So there's management fees and profit fees that can, you know, significantly dwindle down your net return. Again, someone's doing the hard work for you. You gave them a little bit of money. They're putting it in something. They want to get paid. And then, like I mentioned earlier, there is that time horizon. So Masterworks has a holding period of 3 to 10 years. Mm. So if you're not comfortable with being able to, you know, have your money held up for 3 to 10 years, this might not be an investment for you. So if you're looking for something short term,
yeah,
this might not be up your alley. You might want to diversify a different way.
Right. Absolutely. It's important to note that art isn't the only tangible asset that is getting investors excited. The demand for collectibles such as rare coins, vintage watches, sports memorabilia, and even handbags is surging. According to a 2024 Forbes article written by Garth Friesen, and I'm going to quote this, "Although collectibles investing has been around for decades, the COVID-19 pandemic gave the estimated $450 billion market an unexpected boost. Lockdowns led people to explore their passions, and new online platforms emerged, allowing enthusiasts to buy whole or fractional shares of luxury items. High-profile auctions, celebrity endorsements, and media coverage of record-breaking sales have brought collectibles into the spotlight."
Yeah, think about all these celebrities who are showing off their Birkin collections, their car collections, mm-hmm. their watch collections, their jewelry collections.
Yeah, people want a piece of it.
Oh, heck yes.
So let's look at watches in particular for just a minute. According to Grand View Research, the global luxury watch market is valued at approximately $42 billion.
Jeez, that is so much money for watches.
That's a lot of money. The luxury watch market has experienced substantial growth over the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. There are a couple driving factors here. Luxury watches are seen as status symbols, of course. If you see someone with a really nice watch, you're like, oh, well, that person must have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And they are also prevalent on social media and short-form videos that allow celebrities to showcase their accessories.
I love that. And they do it so subtly. It's like a swoop of the hand, and you're like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Definitely catches the eye. Rolex, which is probably the most recognizable luxury watch brand, has seen significant price increases over the past 5 years. In fact, right now, getting a Rolex is really difficult.
Extremely difficult and extremely expensive.
Yes, it is. The Watch Charts Rolex Index, composed of the top 30 models within the brand, mm-hmm. increased nearly 70% between March of 2020 and March of 2022. Dominic Koo, the founder of Watch Fund, has invested in the luxury watch market for over 2 decades. And one thing to remember is that not all watches are considered collectible or investment pieces.
You mean just my little Nokia, like, watch with the calculator? That's probably not worth any money?
Probably not. Don't quote me. I'm not really into the watch market.
You know?
Yeah, probably not.
I was holding on to him. I thought I had some real good investment pieces there.
Yeah, well, just like with anything, you know, that has value, it's usually the scarcity that contributes to that. So if everybody has your Timex watch, then, you know, it's probably not very valuable.
Yeah, you're right.
Might be cool, but might not be very valuable. According to Koo, and this is quote, 99.9% of watches will not sell for a higher price than what you buy them for. Your greatest chance of making money in the watch market is to either buy watches that other people can't buy, aka
Money.
Such as uniques or prototypes, or buy at prices that other people can't get. And I will tell you this, it's also the people that usually have a lot of money that are also getting pieces for prices that you can't get.
Yep.
If you're somebody that is not a frequent customer with Rolex or another one of these luxury watch brands, you aren't getting the call saying, hey, we have a new watch. It's a one of one. Do you want to come see it?
Yeah.
You're not getting that call, and you're also not getting that price.
That's for sure.
So
Rolex ever calls me, I'm going to need to change my pants. So, yeah. You know, that's going to be awesome that day when that day comes.
Change.
And they probably said, ma'am, please return the free bag, the bag you stole. Again, man, I'm on a theft thing. Dan, take all of that out. I don't want people thinking I'm going into stores stealing things, but I might take a bag.
Do we want to say change your pants on this podcast? I don't think we should say that.
I love it.
Oh my God, there's no way. There's no way we can put that on the podcast.
Yes, we can. I'm leaving it.
Okay, leave it. Oh my God. Okay.
I've killed Aaron today with my words.
Yeah,
that's
you did.
Normal.
All right. Maybe from there, do you want to pick up where we left off?
Obviously. Well, we were talking about the pandemic, so let's continue talking about the pandemic.
Okay.
So there's a Charlotte-based collector and a one-time show promoter who called himself a hobbyist historian. I love that. His name is Howard Epstein, and he said that the card market, referring to like baseball cards or sports cards, has outperformed the stock market this year.
Wow.
And he says that, quote, millennials are spending money like crazy. The pandemic kept people home, and some of the older guys are pulling out old stuff and selling it. I know many people who did this. In fact, I pulled out some of my old baseball cards. Yes, I collect baseball cards.
Wow, something new every day.
Well, I know. And to try to see, you know, you never know what you have in there because you're collecting them. You know, sports memorabilia can consist of, you know, there's game-used items, autographed memorabilia, and rookie cards of iconic athletes. Remember, I started collecting these when I just thought it was fun and cool. And I'm like, oh, I like this player. I like this team. Those players have gone on and produced, you know, put out great stats and all this stuff. You never know what you had. Plus, how many times have you bought something, put it away, and completely forgot that you had it?
Right.
That's kind of what's happening. So, again, kind of like the art, these items are unique and can't be replicated, making them highly sought after.
Yeah.
Again, sports memorabilia shows were organized way back in the 70s, but the first national sports collector show was actually held in Los Angeles in 1980.
Okay.
And then shows started with paid celebrity guests who signed autographs, and then again, along with professional grading services, guaranteeing
authenticity?
There you go. Perfect.
Oh, okay, there we
what
go.
What she said. So you want to make sure that it's real autographed cards and other items.
Yeah.
That's something. So again, another little fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, a jersey worn by basketball legend Michael Jordan sold for $10.1 million, becoming the
singular
most...
Singular jersey.
One jersey that had... Sweat on it. Became the most expensive piece of game-worn sports memorabilia ever bought at auction. Can you imagine? If I could sell any of my worn clothes for that much,
any
I would...
Any of your sweaty clothes?
My sweaty clothes, trust me.
$10 million.
I would be rolling in the dough.
Really, really lucrative. So here's the wah-wah part of the pod. We have to talk about the risks. So there are, as you mentioned a little earlier, authenticity issues can occur. The market for collectibles is vulnerable to counterfeits, which can lead to undermining the value of the actual real product if not properly authenticated.
Reminds me of that show, what was it, White Collar, where the guy would paint like replicas, mm-hmm. and they were so good that no one knew. That's why you have to verify that these are real.
Yep. there's all sorts of counterfeits. I don't know. Like, I like to go thrift shopping, too. And sometimes I go to the thrift and there's like, oh, my God, there's a Louis here. No, it's a counterfeit. And the closer you look, you start to see some of the things that are a little off. But upon first glance, it's pretty good.
Have you ever seen the movie Serendipity? Mm-mm. She buys a purse off the street in New York from a vendor. And it's supposed to be Prada, except for it says Prado.
Oh,
so when you look at it, it's like, it looks exactly like a Prada purse. But it, you look at closer glance, it says Prado. And they switch their purse and she goes, oh, no, Prado. And that's what that reminds me of.
That's funny. Yeah, sometimes you can't tell right off the bat. Also, you mentioned illiquidity. Unlike stocks and bonds, collectibles can take some time to sell when you want to make a profit off of them. It's harder to do.
Yeah.
And the market is less standardized. Also, speaking of market volatility, the value of collectibles depends on demand, cultural trends, and economic conditions, making them subject to fluctuations.
Yeah.
And also storage and maintenance. If we're thinking about collectibles, again, one of the attractive parts of it is that it's a tangible asset. But also, what are you going to do with all of these things that you now own? You have to have a place for them. So sometimes that can cost money. And also, it costs money to properly care for these items, to keep them in that mint condition. And it can also just be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I guarantee that whomever purchased Michael Jordan's jersey didn't be like, cool, and then toss it in his closet.
Right, right.
It's probably framed and, you know, in a, what is it, temperature stored area. Like, there's a lot of things that take time to make sure that you preserve these guys appropriately. You can't just be like, okay, I have it now, and then it's just going to sit on the closet floor like all my clothes do.
Yeah.
So, talking about market trends and demand, the art and collectible markets are experiencing significant transformation due to current economic shifts and the growing participation of younger, tech-savvy investors. Mm-hmm. So again, in one of our previous episodes, we had chatted about the great wealth transfer.
Yes.
So millennials and Gen Zs are inheriting wealth and earning higher disposable incomes these days, enabling them to explore alternative investments like the ones we mentioned above.
Mm-hmm.
There is a cultural appeal to this. Younger investors are drawn to culturally significant or nostalgia style items, such as their sneakers, trading cards, contemporary art, all which align with their interests and their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Think about those. I know I have friends who like have every Jordan ever made. I'm like, you only have 2 feet. Can't wear them all, but I don't know. But that my friend loves them.
Yeah.
And some of them are collectible items and some of them he wears. So then there also is that preference for the digital platforms.
Mm-hmm.
We've chatted about this many a times. Investors gravitate towards online marketplaces and apps, which gives them easy access, transparency, and the convenience of buying and selling.
Yeah.
At the tip of your fingers, you can be like, oh, I want a little portion of Steph Curry's rookie card.
Right.
I'm going to go ahead and just put a little dollars onto that.
Right.
And I can do that at home in my pajamas at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Exactly. Not that I ever stay up that late.
Exactly. And speaking of technology and online platforms, we've discussed that has democratized the access to these investments. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned Masterworks when discussing art, but there are other platforms like StockX and Rally Road, just to name a couple more. Mm-hmm. StockX was founded in 2015 as the stock market of things, quote. They use stock market-like model where items are listed, bid on, and sold at real-time market prices based on supply and demand. They focus on products that hold collectible, cultural, or limited edition value.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
I like that. The stock market of things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a fun catch line.
Yeah.
Rally Road. Rally was founded in 2017 in New York. Their core mission was to make alternative investments such as collectibles accessible to everyday investors through fractional ownership. There's also influence from social media. Instagram and TikTok have become powerful tools for promoting collectibles.
Yeah.
Influencers and auction houses are leveraging those channels to reach younger audiences and spark their interest in collectibles. Younger investors often form online communities around shared interests in specific collectibles or artists, furthering demand and creating a sense of belonging. You can find a community for anything these days on the internet.
Yes.
Certainly you can find a community for trading rookie cards, Pokemon cards, yep. sneakers, whatever.
There's a subreddit for everything.
There is.
So, but, you know, I think that's really cool because I actually see a lot of more investment stuff on my feed a lot more now these days too. And I'm like, where did that come along? And then, and then it does. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Speaking of, the reason I saw that I could get a fractional ownership of Steph Curry's card was Rally. I got a little invite from them on my social media and was like, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, every once in a while, I downloaded the app, I go on and I see what's on there, see if I want to, you know, own a little fraction of something cool. So with that, we're going to just talk about a few key takeaways of this episode. Again, the growing demand for collectibles like rare coins, vintage watches, and sports memorabilia reflects a combination of financial, cultural, and emotional drivers. Because a lot of us are, you know, like that nostalgia. You're drawn to it with your heart.
Yeah.
These tangible assets offer diversification, inflation protection, and potential for stronger returns, appealing to a broad spectrum of those investors. Again, there were two mentions where things were doing better than the stock market.
Yeah.
I mean, why try to do that if you can have something kind of fun and make a little bit more money?
Yeah.
But again, as with any alternative investment, through research and authenticity, you got to say the word for me.
Authentication.
Thank you. And an understanding of the markets are critical to mitigating risks and maximizing those returns.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure that you talk to your financial advisor. Seek advice
always.
From a professional.
Not us.
We just want to expose you to different opportunities that exist in the market, different ways that you could diversify your portfolio in a more fun way, maybe.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us today for our second part of our commodity series. Stay tuned for our third part where we will talk a little bit about renewable energy resources like solar power. And we will catch you on the next episode.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for more insight on our next episode.
And don't forget to subscribe to continue the alternative investments chat.
See you next time.
Content provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as professional, financial, or investment advice. This podcast should not be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of any offer to buy any securities. We strongly recommend that you seek advice from a qualified professional before making any financial decisions.